was. It was the poet William Butler Yeats, in his poem, The Burial of the Dead, that observed that April is the cruelest month. Indeed, Madam Speaker, the last Friday in April will be remembered in St. Lucia as the day when a clueless government, motivated by an obsession with power and arrogance and control, delivered to the country the same budget that they had delivered in the year 2008. For the second time, Madam Speaker, validating what the country already knows, things fall apart and the center cannot hold. Last year, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister promised the people of this country the following: redevelopment of the Castries Business District, development of the Castries Cruise Ports, development and expansion of the Viewfort Ports, development and expansion of the Viewfort Free Zone, development of a new cruise port at Viewfort, expansion of George F. L. Charles Airport, Hess Oil Refinery, $7 billion worth of investment. Major announcement, Hess Oil Refinery, $7 billion of investment. Some political wannabes even boasted that there would have been jobs for people in Castries East at the Hess Oil Refinery. Seven major new hotels. Seven. Preliminary works on the Northeast Link Road. 20.2 kilometers of tunnels under the Badeley.
The break was for the podium, which is usually placed before the speakers. That podium has just been placed in front of the Honorable Philip J. Pierre. And as we said earlier, originally scheduled to speak at this time, the Honorable Alpha Baptist, but he's not with us. So the Honorable Philip J. Pierre starts the debate this morning.
20.2 kilometers of tunnels under the Badeley, the Castries East bypass under Bocage, Trois-Pitons, and in Castries, a bypass under the Calvary Ridge. Preliminary work, according to the budget, would commence this year, as last year, and negotiations for financing these projects were well underway. All these developments, Madam Speaker, were to happen in an economy that was, and I quote the Honorable Prime Minister, characterized by much uncertainty generated by the financial market turbulence originating in the U.S. subprime mortgage sector. All these developments have taken place under these conditions. And that is, these are words directly from the budget. There was a prediction, Madam Speaker, that there would be a 7% growth. And at that time, the opposition warned that the global situation was deteriorating due to the increase in fuel prices, and these programs were unrealistic. We were attacked and vilified as usual. This year's budget, suddenly, the members of the government and the Prime Minister realizes that there is crisis in the world economy. Suddenly, this year, they realize that there is crisis in the world economy and that St. Lucia was part of the world and that crisis would affect us. Madam Speaker, Gouvernement actuellement tout seul, copon, c'est ici, c'est en la terre, et ça qui fait l'autre place, qui fait c'est ici. L'année sera tout seul, Gouvernement copon ça. But, Madam Speaker, even in that environment, the Prime Minister is promising to transform Denry as the textile and garment center of St. Lucia. Three new hotels, partnership between government and the private sector, the construction of a highway linking Denry and Grosley, VG Beach redevelopment, the expansion of VG Airport has suddenly disappeared. No more expansion for VG Airport again. But you're going to develop the VG Beach. You're going to develop VG Beach now. Not the airport again, but VG Beach. Then, the development of La Clery. Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister loves his constituency. And I agree with him. These are the people who put him where he is. But the Prime Minister promises development of La Clery, and I quote, into a medium density housing area, integrated with commercial space, sporting and recreational facilities, together with health and fire facilities in La Clery. But in the same budget, Madam Speaker, that same government says that the NIS has agreed to facilitate government, and I quote, through loan funding for the construction of a new fire station at the John Compton Highway extending to Villebouteille. So you're going to have a fire station in Villebouteille and you're going to have a fire station in La Clery. St. Lucia will have the record of having the most fire stations in the country per square mile. One in La Clery and one by the John Compton Highway. That is the government's plan. As the minister, that's verifiable. It was said in the budget. Then they promise again the Castries redevelopment project, a development in collaboration with Royal Caribbean. The same development that they already signed for last year. This year, it's back again, this time in collaboration with Royal Caribbean. But we are being promised this project, Madam Speaker, in a situation where the Prime Minister, by his own admission, says that there is crisis in the world economy. By his own admission, there is crisis in the world economy. But, Madam Speaker, I and members of this side of the House, we have nothing else to say but to conclude that there is an aura of deceit and blame in the operational mode of the government. Deceit and blame in the operational mode of this government. If we compare the promises of the two budgets, we will see that the government is continuing with its policy of flashing mirrors. The government, Madam Speaker, refuses to take responsibility for the development of the country. Refuses. Anytime something goes wrong, the opposition. The government refuses to understand that they were put in power to run the country and the opposition was put in opposition because the people of St. Lucia decided that the government, albeit by 2,000 votes, was better suited to run the country at the time. They refuse to understand that. They've refused to understand that. But, Madam Speaker, the government is so obsessed with power that they find an excuse for everything. They find a reason to blame the opposition for everything that happens in this country. It's the opposition. But, Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister, in bold fashion, he quotes the manifesto of the United Workers' Party. And he quotes the manifesto in terms of a pet topic of every member of this side, particularly a few, debt. That is a pet topic of the government. The Prime Minister feels so emboldened by the debt that he chose on page 7 of his budget to have an entire page on debt. And on page 8, what he expects to be the core of the budget, he quotes the manifesto of the United Workers' Party. Madam Speaker, the budget of the manifesto of the United Workers' Party promises many things.
Honourable Member, would you make it a document of the House?
With pleasure. It's called A Secure Future, Manifesto 2006, United Workers' Party. It promises double-digit economic growth. It promises $300 million reduction in current expenditure, recurrent expenditure. It promises a reduction in the cost of living. It promises a reduction in crime. It promises to remove duties on goods and services to make things cheaper. It promises 7,000 jobs. It promises to reduce employment by 10% in 5 years. It promises all that. But the Prime Minister conveniently chooses to quote one part of it. But in that manifesto, Madam Speaker, there is nothing that says St. Lucia is part of the world. There is not one. In that entire manifesto, St. Lucia is in isolation. Nothing about the rest of the world. Now you come and tell me about crisis in the economy and blaming everything in Patois English on the world stage. Madam Speaker, this is not the first time that economies are in crisis. We handled economies in crisis. There was 9/11. And everybody, and they chose to ridicule 9/11. After 9/11, the situation was worse than it is initially. And during the initial stages of 9/11, the situation was worse than it is now. I'll tell you why. There was always an indication when oil prices began to rise. There was always an indication that the economies were under stress. The cost of living began to rise. The subprime mortgage system was a problem. But 9/11 was sudden. It was a sudden catastrophe on the world economy. Sudden. Nobody knew 9/11 would have happened. So there had to be major adjustments for 9/11. But you had the time to adjust for the world crisis. Because this crisis did not creep upon us. It developed. Madam Speaker, after 9/11, not one plane flew. This crisis never stopped planes from flying. After 9/11, Madam Speaker, after 9/11, the tourism industry came to a halt. This crisis has never caused the tourism industry to come to a halt. Madam Speaker, after 9/11, the entire world had to rearrange and readjust the way things happened. But in this crisis that the government has, you have stimulus packages. The Prime Minister, by his own admittance, makes a point that the IMF will put trillions of dollars in the economy. You had the G20 having time to decide a way forward. After 9/11, there was no time for that. It was something suddenly that impacted on the economy. Madam Speaker, we handled crises. We handled the collapse of the banana industry. We handled high fuel prices. We handled reduction in aid flows. We handled an economy that this government had left in 0.5% growth in 1997. We handled it. And by 2006, we had brought it to 5% economic growth. So we've handled crises. We know about crises. Crises are not new to the country. But the difference between us and them is the management skills for the economy. That is the difference between us and them. Madam Speaker, then we come to the situation of debt. And some members get a kick. They get a kick on debt. That is the linchpin. But, Madam Speaker, let me read to you a fundamental statement in economic and social affairs. You see, Madam Speaker, this government believes that it can continue the flashing mirrors. Just say things that are emotional. Say, vous blaguez, yo pouvez la debt, yo pouvez la. Emotional. But the Prime Minister will not read to you what is not that sensational. He will not read it to you. No, because the flashing mirrors that they think they can put all over the country, these flashing mirrors, the emotive content is not there. So the debt issue is an emotive issue.
Member?
Emotive.
Don't forget to make it a document of the House before you read from it.
Madam Speaker, it's the Economic and Social Review.
Okay.
And I quote 2008. And I quote page 65. It says, an overall deficit of 30.4 million was estimated on the balance of payment accounts for 2008, as the surplus on the financial and capital accounts was insufficient to fully offset the current account deficit. As a result, the overall deficit was financed by a decrease in St. Lucia's share of imputed reserves of 29.5 million or 1.1% of GDP. What that says, Madam Speaker, is that the government could not meet its current expenses. So they had to dip into the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank reserves. And that is careless and reckless. And that shows the mismanagement of the economy in the year 2008. And this is not my document, Madam Speaker. It's not the opposition that's saying that. That is a document of social government. So I'm going to prove to you, Madam Speaker, that all this debt situation that the government is speaking about is a smoke screen. A smoke screen because they don't have the ability to create the environment in this country where you can have surpluses on the current account, as stated in the Social and Economic Review. We're still on debt, Madam Speaker. We're still on debt. Because this government has nothing to be ashamed of about debt. This party. We have nothing to be ashamed of about debt. I challenge the Prime Minister, or I challenge any member of this Honorable House. All of a sudden, the debt situation as it relates to St. Lucia is only St. Lucia. Not the world again. Not the world. The world finished. When it comes to debt, it's not the world. When it comes to debt, it's St. Lucia. When it comes to debt for 15 years, it's not the world. When it comes to debt, when it comes to debt is 20 years, it's not the world. The only time debt is important when it's for St. Lucia. These are the flashing mirrors. That's the pattern of deceit, Madam Speaker. These are the flashing mirrors. So let's talk about debt. All in a sudden, the world is in crisis. The Prime Minister agrees, and I agree with him. The Prime Minister, the economy of the world is in crisis. Suddenly, St. Lucia is part of that world. Forget the point. St. Lucia, talking about Lockdown, never about St. Lucia. Forget about that. Suddenly now, St. Lucia is part of the world, suddenly. But the Prime Minister believes he has the coup de grace. So he's going to hang debt around the government, around the opposition. I challenge anybody inside of here, anybody, any one of them, including us here, to tell me to compare St. Lucia's debt ratio with the rest of the OECS. Compare St. Lucia's debt ratio with the entire OECS except Trinidad and the Bahamas, and tell me what is the result. So when they've used them emotive things about debt, when they're going to be putting up all the presentations about debt, when they put St. Lucia, put Dominica, put Grenada, put St. Vincent, put Barbados, put Antigua, put all of them together, because St. Lucia is part of the world. All of a sudden, the world crisis has hit St. Lucia. Only this government has to deal with crises. Only this government has to deal with the world situation. I'm challenging the government to tell the people what is the debt ratio in the rest of the Caribbean. What is the debt ratio in the rest of the Caribbean? And any argument on debt is misleading if there's not a comparison. So any argument on debt is misleading because there will not be a comparison. A comparison for any period you want. 10 years, 5 years, 15 years, 20 years, presently. Any argument on debt, Madam Speaker, including the debt we got, and including the debt other countries got, and what is the debt now? So it is misleading to believe you can analyze the situation without giving a comparative analysis, because St. Lucia is part of the world. The world crisis is affecting everybody in everything except debt. But Madam Speaker, you know, the crucial point in this budget, the government, there is something, I want to put it in simple terms. There is a current account current income, current expenses. The government could not meet its current expenses. So they had to dip in the reserves of St. Lucia's reserves at the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank to a total of 1.1% of the gross domestic product. So nobody will lend the government money under that situation. Because, Madam Speaker, to borrow money, there must be an ability to pay. People don't lend you money. It's not the money that the government borrows. It's not money you get. It's not money you get from people in Russia. Money you get from financial institutions. And these institutions analyze your balance sheet. They analyze your fiscal operations. And when these institutions see that the government has had to dip because of recklessness, because of the hepatization of the economy, because of the hepatization of the economy, because of the payments for travel and excesses, they could not meet their current expenses. So they have to borrow in their imputed reserves to meet current expenses. That is why it's difficult for any financial institution to lend this government money. But having said so, this year, the government is saying that it will borrow $295 million this year. But last year in the budget, they promised to borrow also. Why? Why couldn't the government borrow? Because the financial institution saw that there was a deficit, that the government could not meet its current expenses without borrowing. 29.5% or 1.1% of the gross domestic product. That's the difference. So now I'm talking about borrowing and debt. Compare it. So, Madam Speaker, the debt arguments, I challenge anybody. When you are speaking about debt, give the comparison. I challenge anybody. Tell me when was the last time that government could not meet its current expenditure. Tell me when is the last time that government had nothing, had no surpluses to invest in its capital accounts. That is the problem, Madam Speaker. But this government doesn't learn. They made a big story of WASCO. And last year, the Prime Minister came in this honorable house and he used these words. He said, as a result of decisive action by this administration, the privatization of WASCO will proceed. That's what the Prime Minister said. He said it in the budget. You see, Madam Speaker, that's the problem with me, you know. Budget, April 20, 2008. These were the Prime Minister's exact words. As a result of decisive action, decisive gouvernement, capon decision, the privatization of WASCO will proceed. This year, the same Prime Minister in the same budget, a firm decision on the water company will be made earlier in the financial year. Last year, there was decisive action. This year is a firm decision. You see, flashing mirrors. But they refuse to learn. They refuse to learn that being in government is different from being in opposition. And any time you open your mouth in government, you are making a statement. So the same government has changed. The same government. The whole tender process. The whole process now has gone haywire, and the government will make a decisive statement on WASCO this year. So, Madam Speaker, this same government will not tell you that they are about to borrow $265 million this year, but they mightn't get it. They might not get it. You know why they mightn't get it? Because the financial institutions, when they look at the current account of this government, when they look at the way the government has managed its expenses, may not believe that the creditworthiness of the country is in a position where you can lend them money. And I challenge them to bring the comparatives and tell me what happens. Bring the comparatives. And you realize that St. Lucia has the lowest debt to GDP in the region apart from two countries in the Caribbean. I challenge them. Madam Speaker, this budget fails to inspire confidence. It doesn't inspire hope. It doesn't inspire any for the unemployed worker The government doesn't inspire any hope because the same projects, redevelopment of Kashi Sport, several hotels, same projects. But Madam Speaker, look at the flashing mirrors of this government. Look at how the government is saying one thing in one hand and saying another thing in the other hand in the same breath. The government is imposing a tax on dividends. Now, the same government that wants to have a partnership with the private sector, the same government that speaks about foreign investments, that government now wants to impose dividends on profits. You know what that means, Madam Speaker? Dividends, taxes on dividends. You know what that means? That means that when an investor is coming to invest in St. Lucia and he's preparing his business plan, he will have to make a provision for taxes. That is a disincentive to investment. It's the same government that speaks about partnership with the private sector. The same government that talks about attracting foreign investment is about to tax dividends. It's about to tax profits. That's what they're going to do. It's going to tax the profits on the dividends. The same government. Flip, flashing mirrors. One hand, the other hand. But, Madam Speaker, what is even worse? What is even worse in that retrograde step is that it brings back an old saying in the financial world, which is called ring fencing. Ring fencing is a saying that was used by the OECD a few years ago that says there must be equality in tax treatment for locals as is for foreigners. But, Madam Speaker, when the international community will learn that this government has decided to tax dividends, you know what will happen? They will ask the government to tax local dividends also. They will ask the government to tax local dividends. So that means all the little people who have their shares at Bank of St. Lucia, all them have their shares at Lucilec, all them have their shares at Minera, will be taxed also because they've just started with foreigners. But they have to move because there has to be full. The Prime Minister just left the G20 meeting. The crux of the financial world is transparency, is equality of treatment. He knows that. And the Prime Minister also knows that the whole financial offshore sector is under threat because of these tax issues. But we are taking a backward step. We are going to tax dividends. That's what we're going to do. We're going to tax dividends. Madam Speaker, how can you speak about stimulating spending and investment when you want to have a disincentive to people who want to invest money? And to make it worse, they are also taxing interest on loans. So, Madam Speaker, if a foreign investor wants to invest in St. Lucia, when he brings his money in from abroad, money that was not made in St. Lucia, clean money, when he brings that money into St. Lucia, to invest in St. Lucia, to create jobs for people, to help the unemployment situation, when he's charged an interest on that money, you're taxing it. You're taxing it. That is a disincentive for investment. But you're speaking about foreign investment and expanding the economy. Flashing mirrors. Flashing mirrors. Madam Speaker, the government not being able to meet its current expenses is for talking about VAT. The Prime Minister continues to make the statement that VAT is not an additional tax. Madam Speaker, VAT may not be an additional tax, but VAT imposes an additional tax burden on the people of the country. Because, Madam Speaker, VAT is a tax on goods and services. So that means if you go to the hairdresser, you have to pay VAT. If you're going to cut your hair at a barber, you have to pay VAT. But right now, you're not paying VAT. But again, flashing mirrors. And I must say, the Prime Minister used a bit of skill, but that skill is skill that you play for fellas batting number 10 and number 11. He increases the capital allowances by $1,000. So he says 800 people will be out of the tax net. Very good. Sounds nice. $1,000 deduction in capital allowances. Divide 1,000 by 12. How much money, Max? How much money? That's $90. How much money? $90? About $97 per month. So the Prime Minister is giving people a $90 a month relief. Sounds good. But he's taking it back in the VAT. He's taking it all back in the VAT. Because VAT, you see, man, figure, he's taking it all back in the VAT. So whereas politically, and that is why I tell you this government is obsessed with politics. Politically, it sounds good. $1,000 in personal allowance. Very good. The government is taking out 800 people from the tax range. But they are collecting it back in the VAT. So the low-income worker, the low-income owner will not be better off. Even with that $1,000, the low-income worker will not be better off. Flashing mirrors again. Madam Speaker, the government speaks to deduction in mortgage interest. Sounds good again. Mortgage interest. We're going to remove it from $18,000 from $8,000 to $20,000. Raise to $18,000 and $20,000. Sounds very good. Good. But here's the catch. That same government is capping house repairs at $10,000. The same government. And as per usual, the government must find somebody to blame. So now they're going to create class warfare. This is a shelter for high-income owners. All of them with a house in Rodney Bay and Capri State, he says it's a shelter for them. People like me and the member from Grocery, we don't live in the areas. So he says that is a tax shelter for them, a tax shelter. Because what they do is they fix the big houses and in Rodney Bay and these areas, and they claim tax rates. So big thing. So he's going to cap it at $10,000. But look at the catch. This government doesn't understand that repairs to houses create employment. It stimulates growth. It stimulates carpenters, masons, painters. They get work, Madam Speaker. So even though the big boys that you are creating a class warfare with, saying that they use it for a tax shelter, are charging $50,000 or $60,000 repairs and maintenance. That stimulates growth. But even if, Mr. Prime Minister, and I know you don't like to listen to advice, and I've told you that the advice coming here is better. Even if you want to say that there's an abuse of repairs and maintenance, I have a suggestion for you. There is an audit function in the Inner Revenue Department. What happens now is if you declare $50,000, $60,000 worth of repairs and maintenance, the Inner Revenue tells you to bring your bills. All right? Then you bring the bills, and I agree, it takes transactions because you have to check it out every bill. My suggestion to you, Mr. Prime Minister, is if somebody claims more than $10,000, charge them a fee that will cause you to be able to recoup the cost that it takes to audit the extra expenses. So the Inner Revenue Department, the gentleman will go and say, where is the house you're building? If you build a big house in Forest Hills, you have expenses, where is the house that you're building? Where are the extra expenses on that house? So, the Inland Revenue will go up, they will go there, and they will say, show me the repairs and maintenance that cost more than $10,000. You understand? Then you will charge the taxpayer for that, so they can verify it, so you can recoup your costs, and you can continue to have the benefits of repairs and maintenance. That, Madam Speaker, is a solution to the problem of the excesses in the repairs and maintenance. Madam Speaker, gas prices. The Prime Minister makes a big fuss. April to September, there was a subsidy of $13 million on gas prices. But not He stops after September. He never says how much money was made between September and after September. Flash in the mirror. He stops at September. $13 million of subsidies. No problem, I agree. Nothing new. We subsidize fuel for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Nothing new. But I agree with you. You have to get subsidies. But tell the people of the country how much money you made after September. Tell them. But still for that, you reduce petrol by 55 cents. But you are still making an average of between $3 and $5 on every gallon of gas that is purchased in the country. And to add to that, flashing mirrors. Take it with one hand, breathe with another one. You can see there is a socialist thing in that budget. There is a socialist thing in that budget. Take it one hand, but you reduce it by 55 cents. But you charge the people of St. Lucia $7 million in terms of vehicle licenses. And don't tell me how I know that, because you put it in your revenue. You put it there. You put it in the revenue. So whereas Ministry of Communication Works, motor vehicle licenses, Madam Speaker, document of the House, page 7, money, $7 million. So you make a big fuss that you are reducing gas prices by 55 cents. Gas, let us compare St. Lucia and the rest of the world. Rest of the region, because you're still in crisis. Gas is higher in St. Lucia than anywhere else in the region. But, Madam Speaker, gas is higher in St. Lucia. It's higher in St. Lucia. Even with a 55 cents reduction, you're still going to be higher. When your time comes, you'll get the facts. But, Madam Speaker, you have imposed $7 million more taxes on the people of St. Lucia, but you say you have reduced gas prices. Madam Speaker, the government creates sin taxes. The government sin taxes. I have no issue with sin taxes. But I hope, and I sincerely hope that the sin taxes on alcoholic beverages are not only for the people in the rum shops in Masha. I really hope, because there is something called cabinet and there is something called incentives. I really hope that when they impose their sin taxes, the sin taxes are equitable. Everybody pays sin taxes. So the man who buys his bounty in Marshall will have to pay the sin taxes, the same sin taxes as the other people who buy their wines in the hotel. I hope so, in the hotel. Madam Speaker, this government is a government of excuses. The government's non-performance is always somebody's fault. It is always somebody's fault. It's because of somebody, the opposition, you all borrow, Kenny, blah, blah. It's not me, it's you. It's because you did that. That's why. Always somebody's fault. Right now it's crisis. It's world crisis. World economy. Kenny. Always. Never takes responsibility. The government promises to reduce waste by rationalizing the use of office space to reduce expenditure. While the government is rationalizing office space, the government is not only contracting to rent more offices. The government says that it will borrow $45 million to build an office at the top of John Compton Highway. $45 million. And that same government that is talking about waste and talking about rationalizing office space is borrowing, or wants to borrow, $35 million to fix a deserted building that they call the hypermart. What do you call it? Badawaj Hypermart. But everything around that building is secrecy. That whole building is shrouded in secrecy. Mr. Prime Minister, please, how much have you bought the building? How much have you paid for the building? What is the structural integrity of the building? Have you got the building valuated or valued by the engineers? Is the building fit for repairs? How what is the situation with the land in front of the building? Tell the people of St. Lucia. But you say that you're going to rationalize office space, but you are spending $45 million on a one-set of offices in John Compton Highway, and you're going to be borrowing another set to fix a building that has remained deserted. Flashing mirrors, Madam Speaker. Flashing mirrors. I'm saying to the Prime Minister, to abandon this Badorange hypermarket business and take that money and use it for better use in the economy of St. Lucia. That is what I'm saying to the Prime Minister. Abandon that. Be a man. Abandon that. Say, this is wrong. It has no use. I'm going to abandon it, Madam Speaker. But, Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister speaks about the world economy. He speaks about crisis. He continues to blame the opposition. But the same Prime Minister, in 2007, there was a budget item of $104,213,674, which was 39% of the capital expenditure. And that was supposed to come from China. In that same budget, the government put in the budget that, among other things, that $104 million would establish ICT parks. So you see, the same thing you have in this budget about ICT and computer for every child, you already had the finance of $26.7 million to establish ICT parks. You didn't do it. You did not do it because you chose to change your diplomatic relations. You also had, in that budget, $5 million for crime prevention, $8 million for sports facilities, $6.2 million to repair work on the mental facilities, and $3.3 million to repair schools. You already budgeted that money in the $104 million you were supposed to get from China. But for your own reasons, you changed, and you lost that $104 million. And you're telling me that the Taiwanese are giving you grassroots projects. Madam Speaker, let me tell you the folly of that argument. When governments negotiate with governments about diplomatic relations, they tell the governments what they want. So if this government wanted to do grassroots projects with the government of France, the government of England, they could say to the government, what we want is grassroots projects. So the argument that China only gives white elephants and the Taiwanese give grassroots projects is an argument that holds no water. It's another flashing mirror. Another flashing mirror. Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister says the world is in crisis. He says tourism is down, manufacturing is down, bananas, by the member for Babineau, he says, the only thing that's good, he says, is there is some hope in agriculture. That's what he says. I don't know if that's true, but that's what he says, that there's some hope in agriculture. But everything is done. But still everything is done, but the Prime Minister...
On a point of order, Madam Speaker, will the member quote the page from which I made the statement?
Okay, Honourable Prime Minister, it's a point of elucidation, not a point of order. Member, you are being asked to give the evidence for what you are saying from the budget.
The evidence for what? That's the budget crisis?
The Prime Minister did ask
for okay, no problem. And speaking of the Prime Minister, page 3, crisis in the world economy. Page 3.
Madam Speaker, that's not what the member said. The member said, I said, the only place that performance took place was in Babylon.
Yeah, yeah, come further. Agriculture, yes, Mr. Prime Minister. I ain't lasting long enough. Let me tell you something about what you said about my 10 minutes. I hope you give more time. You promise me that. You know he doesn't keep your promises. The Prime Minister said, anyhow, Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister knows what I'm talking about. He just wants to set me up so I can't have time to speak.
Okay.
Madam Speaker.
Honourable Member, just return to the
tourism, Madam Speaker.
I take it that he has withdrawn the statement. So let us go back to
him to find.
What do you want me to withdraw?
Find the quotation.
What? What do you want me to quote? What? Tell me what, Mr. Prime Minister. Have you forgotten? What? Yes, I forgot. I forgot. You remind me. Yes, you remind me. Remind me. Remind me. Remind me what I said. What did I say?
Can we go back to the business of the debate, please?
Man, see the flashing mirrors again. That's the habit. Okay, tourism. Madam Speaker, where is the Minister for Tourism? Where is he? I'm sure. I have a bet. Anybody tell me the Minister of Tourism is 5 cents. This year, Madam Speaker, the tourism industry is showing declines. 7.6% in January, 14.2% in February, and 18.9% in March. This year, October visitors. But the government very skillfully includes stayover visitors with cruise tourism. Very skillfully. They mix it together. That never was done before, but they've created an act of statistical genius. They've included cruise tourism with stayover visitors. So they say that for January to March, there's an increase of 3.7%. But this government is not telling you that from January to March, there was a reduction of 14.5% in bed nights. 14.5%. But I'm happy that the Minister of Tourism now is a convert to cruise. He's a convert to cruise tourism because he attacked me when I spoke about diversity and I spoke about the juxtapositioning cruise and stayover visitors. I'm very happy now that he is a convert to cruise tourism and he has taken with him the Minister of Southeast Castries. So they hold hands together and they're supporting cruise tourism. Very good. Very good for the country. But that is the same government that criticized us when we were in improving conditions at the port to be able to be in wide-bodied boats. The same government. And if we didn't borrow, we could not have fixed the port, so you could not have had your cruise tourism numbers. We've created the basic infrastructure. We borrowed to fix the port, and when anybody fix the port, you can bring in your boats now, and you can boast about increasing cruise tourism. Vision. You're talking about tunnel? I am speaking about the expansion of the port. I am speaking about the expansion of the port so that we could attract the wide-bodied vessels. Do not create these flashing mirrors. That will not save you. Madam Speaker, the government only now, the government understands the impact of the global situation on the tourism industry. When they brought in the savior, and they brought him in with a highly paid hired help, they brought a savior and a highly paid hired help. The most expensive man in the country, they brought both of them down. They were all over the place saying, we didn't know what to do in tourism. Tourism was something, there was nothing happening in tourism. There was bad planning. There was poor planning. We will change the entire tourism situation in the country. We have ideas, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, this government has invested more than $100 million in the tourism industry in the last 2 years. More than what we invested in the last 5 years. $103 million. You know what that has given the country?
Honourable Member for Castries, you have 15 minutes left to speak.
Madam Speaker, I beg that we suspend Section 32(8). To allow the honourable member an extra 1 hour to complete his presentation.
Before I put the question, honourable member, it's standing order 32(10). Honourable members, the question is that standing order 32(10) be suspended to allow honourable member for Castries East an additional 1 hour to make his contribution. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member, you will now complete your speech in one in 60 minutes more than your original time. So you continue your 15 minutes and an additional hour.
Thank you very much, Oswego. Madam Speaker, $53 million in tourism expenditure attracted 8,243 more visitors. So at a cost of $6,429 per visitor. That is how you spend your tourism dollars. That's how you spend it. When I was Minister for Tourism, St. Lucia attracted, the country attracted per tourist. We paid the smallest amount in the region per tourist because of the way we handled the scarce resources that we had. Our marketing cost was, for the last 5 years, it was less than what you had for two. Madam Speaker, the minister is good in research. That's up to him to research. But I'm putting it to you. I'm putting it to you that it's verifiable. Our cost per head was less. It surely was not $6,429. Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Tourism, and I warned the Prime Minister, I warned him about these fancy projects. They spend, up to now, they can't tell you publicly how much money they spent on a rebranding exercise. What did the rebranding do? The rebranding changed the country from St. Lucia Simply Beautiful to St. Lucia. But you know what's dangerous about that rebranding? They had to spend millions of dollars to change all St. Lucia's creatives. Every letterhead, they had to change it. They had to take out the logo. Things like T-shirts, they had to change it. Wasted money in times of crisis. You mean to tell me, if somebody is making a decision to visit St. Lucia, they will visit St. Lucia because you say St. Lucia is St. Lucia? I mean, where is the logic in that kind of expense? Where is the logic in that kind of expense, Madam Speaker? You say that you are in times of crisis. But you say, that's what you said. I'm not the one who said it. You said you're in times of crisis, but you've changed it from St. Lucia to St. Lucia, and that will attract visitors. Up to now, Madam Speaker, we have not been told how much that rebranding has cost. Up to now, we do not know. That money, Madam Speaker, could be used to market St. Lucia. It could be used in TV advertisements, or it could be used for product improvement, Madam Speaker. Our priorities in the industry ought to be marketing, marketing, marketing. We have to work with the hotels to market the country, not to spend money for fanciful things like rebranding. I came here, Madam Speaker, and I said to the Prime Minister, the CHA conference is a good thing, but it's at the wrong time. They spent about $7 million for the CHA conference. They had a big party at Pigeon Point. My friends from abroad called me. They said they never see more food and more free food and rum like that. Endless food and rum. Fellas come from everywhere. Fellas come call fellas boys, think that they're free. Food, drink, rum. All kind of expenses, Madam Speaker, for a CHA conference. Up to now, you cannot tell me what are the direct benefits. I'm not saying, don't misquote me, I'm not saying it may not have some benefits. I am saying at the time of crisis, you don't spend $7 million to bring people into St. Lucia to give them food and drink when your country is in crisis. That's what I'm saying. Further.
Order.
This government is talking about an FCCA conference, Florida Cruise Line Conference, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I want to make it a document of the House. That conference was slated for Guatemala. Guatemala, a country in the largest city in Central America, Guatemala City. That was the country where the FCCA conference was to be held at Guatemala. The Guatemala government says things are tough, so we don't want it. the largest city, the largest city in Central America, says they can't take it. Guatemala receives millions of cruise passengers, millions, Mr. Minister of Communication Works, not 700,000, millions Guatemala getting cruise passengers. Guatemala says they cannot do the conference because it costs too much money. But you have it in Saint-Lucia instead. You're going to spend another $7 million to have it. You're going to have more food and free drink. You understand? At a time when people in the hotels are losing their jobs, when taxi drivers, they cannot pay their loans because there are no visitors. You've spent about $14 million to have conferences in St. Lucia, a part instead of taking that money to assist the hotels so that they can protect the jobs of the people who work in these hotels. I'll tell you something. The hotel, instead of that money could be used, the government could go have an arrangement with the hotels to use that money to subsidize the wages of people in the hotel industry. That $14 million you're spending to help these people save their jobs in this time of crisis. Not take the money and spend on consultants. Not take the money and spend on FCCA conferences. Not take the money and spend on travel and waste. That money should be used to do that instead, Madam Speaker. That money could be used to re-employ the hostesses that you fired in Soufre. That money could be used to re-employ them. That money using for all these conferences, Madam Speaker. But that money could be used to re-employ the hostesses and the rangers to stop that confusion you have in the cruise ports every time there is a cruise liner. Not taking and putting conferences to give you free rum and to drink. When countries bigger than you, larger than you, they decided that they cannot do it. That is how you spend that money, Madam Speaker. In hard times, in times of crisis, that is how you spend that money. Madam Speaker, arrivals in our main market are falling. But there is an incoherent approach to the tourism strategy. If it's not boxing, it's conference. If it's not conference, it's something in paradise. If it's something in paradise, it's tourists from Mexico. Either tourists from Mexico, it's tourists from Russia. All kinds of mixed messages. Madam Speaker, we are in times of crisis. You have to concentrate on your source markets. And these source markets are the markets of the United Kingdom and Canada. Madam Speaker, I came and I spoke about airline subsidies. I said there was nothing wrong in airline subsidies. I understand that. In their usual flashing mirror style, they try to say that we never subsidized airlines. Of course, we worked with Delta Airlines. We worked with Delta Airlines. Of course we did. But we came to this honorable house and we said how much it costs. When I asked for that cost, that was a state secret. They only had to tell me after we had to put a question to the house and the Prime Minister muffled some response. After we had to make it. But right now, what happened? We paid American Airlines and they still stopped the flights. They stopped it. Albeit temporarily, they stopped it. We went to Viewfort in American Eagle. We had a big scene on TV. They even invited CNN to say American Eagle is landing in Viewfort. The flight came to Viewfort 3 times. It disappeared. I told them that was not an additional flight. They said I was a liar. That's an additional flight. You understand? Right now, the flight has disappeared. What I said to the government is when you're talking about airline subsidies, let us do it scientifically. Let us look at the contract. Let's discuss it like a country. Because we love St. Lucia too. We know tourism is important. We know that that is a way to alleviate poverty. But what we're saying is that you don't have all the ideas. You don't know everything. Let us look so the people you're negotiating with, Madam Speaker, because the American Airlines, you see, there's a belief that people like people. So Mr. DeLara, he likes somebody. There's no liking that, you know, Madam Speaker. That's straight dollars and cents. There's no like. That's dollars and cents. So when you are negotiating with airlines, what we're saying to you is bring it to the people of the country. Do like Grenada or Jamaica. Let everybody know. Don't do it in a back door, in a very secret, take a plane, run around fire and say you're negotiating. And when it backfires, you look for somebody to make an excuse, to blame somebody. You blame somebody when it backfires. Madam Speaker, we must approach Liad differently. I know Liad has problems. I understand that. But we must stop attacking Liat. We must stop because Liat has remained, albeit sometimes the service is poor, Liat has remained with the region, and Liat has continued to give a valuable service to the region. So stop attacking Liat and put your money in airlines, in other airlines. That will just stop coming. Liat, Madam Speaker, even though Liat is not making profits, Liat continues to come. Once you cannot pay American Airlines again, they'll stop coming. I'm saying to you, you must subsidize them. You must subsidize Ellis. I understand that. But do it scientifically and do it in a way that's transparent and a way that's accountable and equitable. That's the question. Madam Speaker, our marketing dollars must be spent on marketing, not on traveling, Madam Speaker. And I want to ask the Honorable Prime Minister to ensure that the financial statements of the Zero Tourist Board are tabled in this Honorable House. The financial statements are late. They ought to be tabled 3 months after the government's year end. The last set of financial statements that were in this Honorable House for the Ministry of Tourism, and when I was a minister, we need to see these statements. They need to be tabled, Madam Speaker. They must be tabled because the money that the Tourist Board has is the money of the people of St. Lucia. And tourism is the mainstay of the economy. We need to have an account for the way the money is spent. Madam Speaker, the government should use that money to work in sandals, to market the country. Sandals has a very large marketing reach. You understand? Work with them. Work. Let's go. Let's do some joint marketing. Let's coordinate our activities. Let's not run away and spend money somewhere because you believe you know more than anybody else. Let's work together with Sanders. You work together with Sanders, Madam Speaker, so that we can market, we can get a buck for our marketing dollar. The Prime Minister, Madam Speaker, speaks about the private-public sector collaboration. I want to tell the Prime Minister, Madam Speaker, that he should look into the situation that at Le Paradis. Call them in and discuss it. Because that development has the potential to transform that part of the country. Do not let it stay and waste. Do not, because of your pride, because of the way you have attacked us for creating jobs for 600 people in a hotel, the way you have attacked us for having a hotel that was not functioning. That hotel now is functioning. People are employed. Farmers, taxi drivers, all kind of revenue has accrued from that hotel. Do not allow Le Paradis to be like that. Sit down with Le Paradis, the same private sector thing you're talking about, and let's see if we can save Le Paradis, Madam Speaker. That would substantially improve the situation in that part of the country, and that is the essence of village tourism. That's the essence of village tourism. You have a marquee property, and that whole coast, Denry, Miko, etc., will survive because of that hotel. So let us talk about doing something. Let's discuss with them to see if we can revive Le Paradis Hotel. Let's discuss with them, Madam Speaker, because we cannot allow that to waste. We can't allow it to go to waste. Madam Speaker, the government speaks about village tourism. Again, it sounds well. But the same government is threatening to close the nature, heritage, tourism, and community sites. The same government. The same government that's speaking about village tourism is threatening to close the nature, heritage, tourism, and community development sites as far as tourism is concerned. Why, Madam Speaker? They are saying, the reason why they want to do it, because it was our thing. We call it nature, heritage, tourism project. That's not good, so you call yours village tourism. You call us village tourism. Now, listen to that, Madam Speaker. They are talking about village tourism. And they are talking about security on the site. They want to close down the site. But when we left them with a hostesses program and a rangers program, Madam Speaker. These were what these people were supposed to do. If you found there was fault in it, restructure it. Build on what we left. Improve it. Do like the Minister of Agriculture. Improve on what you find. if you think it's not good enough. But no. Oh, fine. Well, improve on nothing. So that means you plant all the banana trees in 2 years. Yeah, that's what you did. All right, great. You improve on what you found. Improve on what you found. But no, because it was labor, it was fear, it's not good. So you close down the hostesses, you close down the rangers, and you speak about harassment at nature heritage tourism sites. We've had a zero tolerance toward harassment, but the hostesses and the rangers, they helped in that regard. And the rapid response, they helped, but you closed it down, and now you're complaining, you want to threaten them. But, Madam Speaker, the government must reconsider the situation of the hostesses and the rangers. And they must work in collaboration with the owners of these sites and the hotel owners so that they can create some situation where security will be improved on these sites. Speaking of village tourism, Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister says we must seek to develop more tourism enterprises to be operated and owned by locals. But Madam Speaker, while you're speaking about new properties, the existing small hotels in the country are dying. The existing small hotels in the country are collapsing because of debt, because of low occupancy, because of bankruptcy. You are not paying attention to the existing small hotels, but you are speaking about opening new hotels. When the existing ones, the existing small hotels, you're not giving them any support. I don't know where if you give them any bailout money, because it said that you spent, that the hotels were given a bailout, not the hotels, the industry was given a bailout of $7 million. You are paying no attention to the small hotel industry, but you are asking people to open new, hotels. Flashing mirrors. Madam Speaker, our tourism industry is under threat. You see, Madam Speaker, the government, that is like a recurring decimal. Anytime you tell the government something, what y'all did? Anytime that y'all did it too. And it is so passe. And it's like I know the Prime Minister had a very inspiring moment with President Obama. He should ask President Obama whether he speaks about President Bush. Ask him. No, your people of St. Lucia choose you to run the country. They choose you to run it. You run it. Stop. You run it. Stop attacking what did you do when you were there, when you did it. You run it. That's your responsibility, not mine. It's yours. Run it now. Because you wanted to run it. So don't stop it. So cut off this thing. Say what you did there, what you did there. Stop it. Madam Speaker, the government has to pay special attention to small hotels, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, our tourism industry is under threat. We need to approach it in a mature, scientific, and all-inclusive manner. One man has not got all the answers. We need to approach it collectively, Madam Speaker. We have to ensure that the benefits accrue to everybody. We have to look at causing the hotels to make some more profit. We have to ensure that the benefits go to the workers, to the hotel owners, to the taxi drivers, to the vendors. We must see if we can diversify our product, Madam Speaker, using what we have. And we must stop the loss of jobs in the tourism industry. We must stop it. We have to look for some arrangement with the hotel owners so that instead of spending that money on conferences and on travel and on telephone calls, we can use it to save the jobs of people in the hotel industry. That's got to be of paramount importance to the government, Madam Speaker, saving jobs. You can't have an economy where it's bleeding, where jobs are being lost every day, and you have money for conferences and to pay people to come to St. Lucia and drink rum. You must stop it. Use that money to sustain these jobs, because whereas these conferences may do you well in the long run, initially we have to deal with a problem on our hands. So, Madam Speaker, $103 million later, we are seeing that there's absolutely no improvement in the tourism industry. Not one hotel project. There is not one hotel that this government can claim under its watch. Not one. not one. Every hotel that this government can claim, the negotiations began under us. Not one, man speaker. But they won't say that. They will not say that. They will not say that. But anytime it's a negative, y'all, why you over there? Why y'all do this? Anytime the negative is us. Madam Speaker, the Minister of Education, I don't want to defend him, the former minister, he always made the point that when he came into office, there was a World Bank project for the secondary schools, but you do not have the political will to follow some of the dictates of that agreement, because you didn't want to lose votes by not subsidizing school transportation. The minister always makes that point. So do not say that. The former minister, don't say. He always said so. Madam Speaker, commerce and trade. All the initiatives mentioned in commerce and trade ought to have happened for the last 2 years. Every one of these initiatives ought to have happened already if the government hadn't been changing trade ministers like that. The trade ministry is a thing you use to change. That's the trade ministry. The government had two trade ministers at times. They started with two trade ministers. Two trade ministers. Then they changed. They went after they had their problems of leadership. They had another trade minister. Then after they had their problems of people wanting big posts, they had another trade minister. That is why the Ministry of Trade could not. That is why the Ministry of Trade, and furthermore, they had a first trade minister who was supposed to be another guru. He cannot give one achievement as Minister of Trade. Not one. Apart from a bread basket that had a lot of holes. So all your trade ministers, you had two of them one time. You've had four trade ministers, Madam Speaker. Four trade ministers. And at least one of them may have been good intentions. But he didn't have any time because you had to juggle. So the ministry you juggle is trade. That's the one you juggle. No wonder all the initiatives you mentioned in the budget for trade had been mentioned years before. Consumer Protection Act, National Export Strategy, Health for Small Business, every one of them had been mentioned at least 4 years before. Yes, two of mine and two of yours. I started. But you have to continue. You have to continue, Mr. Prime Minister. That's what governance is about, continuity. But you could not continue because you were juggling the Ministry of Trade. And soon from now, I've warned you, you may have to juggle again the Ministry of Trade, because that's the one you're juggling, because that's the one that you have flexibility in, because all of them you have there are unelected, so you can juggle them. That's the only place, because men is hold on, lock me. Madam Speaker, the government speaks about a buy local philosophy. Again, Madam Speaker, it sounds good, very good. But Madam Speaker, the essence of buy local is not buy local, it's international. You have to raise the quality of your goods to international standards. Because the Prime Minister knows very well, he goes to the meetings, that when, Madam Speaker, I'll give you a little story. And allow me to. When I was Minister of Commerce, there was something happening at Super G, and I spoke about buy local. You know, I was reported to CARICOM for speaking about buy local in a CSM context, because we are living. So do not use these emotive things of buy local. You must tell the local producer. You will give him all the support you can because you are changing the Fiscal Incentive Act. And the reason why you're changing it is because you know in the Act it's not WTO compatible. So you have to change it. I started it. You have to change it. But when you tell people about buy local, you give people a false impression that you can make people buy local. You cannot do it. What you must tell them to do is you must tell them to improve the quality of their goods You must tell them to improve the quality of the goods, Mr. Speaker, and you must expand the Bureau of Standards. I started it. You must expand the Bureau of Standards, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we must be mindful about our regional trade commitments. We must be mindful of that, Madam Speaker. And how can the government be serious about small business when in the estimate, he only has $100,000 to fully operationalize the Micro Business Act, $100,000. That's all you need. Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister says, Madam Speaker, there is a, when the $100,000 in that ministry was given to SLISBA as support for SLISBA. I'm asking the Prime Minister whether that $100,000 is for SLISBA or whether it is to operationalize the Micro and Small Business Act. That's the question. Whether, who is it for? What is it for? The $100,000 in the estimates. For SLISBA or to operationalize the Micro and Small Business Act? So, Madam Speaker, talking about trade, which has signed the EPA, and there are issues in the EPA which the government should look about. There are issues that will affect negatively the local services industry. There are issues that, and I am asking the Prime Minister, when in negotiations in the services part of the EPA to ensure that local services are not unduly affected. Not unduly affected. Roads, Madam Speaker, roads. Mr. Speaker, you see so much in a hurry, you haven't watching. Yeah, it's too hasty. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister lists a number of roads for construction or repair in the fiscal year. A number of roads, Madam Speaker. Now, I was checking on the list that he said. Madam Speaker, you cannot, Mr. Speaker, you cannot doubt the Prime Minister's political savvy. You know, he doesn't win his seat because he doesn't understand, you know. He understands it. Let me tell you the list of roads that he said he will repair. And you'll see how these roads, look at the roads, Madam Speaker. Urban Cassis Road. Now, every road passing to Bokaj. Listen, page 45. Bokaj to Shabot to Sunville, one road. Let's go again. Still in Bokaj. Everything is Bokaj. Then he goes to page 46, Bokaj to Mondidon. Then he goes again to page 46, Bokaj to Jira. You know why, Madam Speaker? Because all these roads border on his constituency, he and the member for South East Cassis. So what they do is they throw Bokaj in. Bokaj. not you. South. I'm the minister for Bawendo. So he just throw Bokaj in. Because he knows that I have begged him. I have begged the minister. I have begged him to repair Bokaj. So you can't blame him. His political mind tells him he'll put Bokaj to Sabot to Sunbill. So he slides Sunbill in. Then he says, Marshall to Njibo. Then he says, Pavi. Then he sticks in Pavi Road and Pavi to Rockall. You understand? Why is he saying that? He's stuck in Leslieland to Cedars, Kaya Road, Chase Gardens to Lapasi, Chase Gardens to York Hill, PZ to Kareli to Chase Gardens, all that in his constituency. But I'm very thankful that you put in Bokaj and Pavi. But I hope when I come here next year that these roads are indeed fixed. I really hope. Because the bus drivers in Bokaj, they want the road fixed. I really hope when I come in next year that you really fix this road and that's not another flashing mirror. Madam Speaker, the quadrant, if you fix it, I'll be happy. I'm not having any predisposed happiness. My happiness comes after the fact or during the fact. Both. Madam Speaker, the quadrant plan now has been downgraded to sub-regional plans. Madam Speaker, let me quote for you. You understand, sir? Page 44, economic infrastructure. The quadrant development initiative was mentioned in last year's budget. Already, strategic sub-regional plans have been developed for Labri, Miku, Anseri, Canneries, and Chiruzel. In the Northeast Quadrant, discussions are underway on the feasibility study for the construction of a highway linking Denry to Grosseteague. So it's fair to say that the quadrant plan has been downgraded to sub-regional plans. Madam Speaker, last year's budget, the people of St. Lucia were told that there would have been 20.2 kilometers of tunnels, part of the quadrant plan.
Mr. Speaker, on a point of clarification, what the statement in the budget attempts to do is to draw to the attention of members government's continuing program. It's continuity. The national vision plan has been established. It is a national plan for development. At this stage, we now zero in on specific regions and to develop those plans fully for implementation. It's part now of the strategic implementation plan. That's what it is. It's not downgraded or anything of this nature.
Thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister. Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, there is a new custom of the government now. The government lists all the roads to be fixed, and they don't say how much it will cost. They do not say how much it will cost. You know why? The government on page 45, 46, and 47, they've listed a number of roads. But they refuse to say how much these roads cost. You know why? Because they have made such a hue and cry about cost overruns. They do not want to tell you how much they projected that these roads will cost. Because they know very well, because they already have the experience. They know very well that the projected cost for the roads never happened. So very skillfully, flashing mirrors. They do not tell you how much the road will cost. So when the time comes, they will tell you there will no cost overruns. Yes, creativity. You understand? They don't tell you that. You see my son? And that is what the people is, and these flashing mirrors and these inconsistencies of this government, the people of St. Lucia must know. You refuse to say how much the road will cost. You just list them. And you have a big figure, a major figure in your estimate for road development. But you're not saying how much each individual road will cost. You never say. You understand? Because you know that you've had projects in St. Lucia, the few projects that you have, that you've put a certain fee on them, and they have had cost overruns.
All of them.
Marigold Housing. So, you understand? That's just one. So, Madam Speaker, you know very well.
Mr. Speaker, on a point of correction, please. Please. You know, I hear about flashing mirrors, Mr. Speaker, and I hear certain assertions being made. But when the member for Castries East could stand in this honorable house and without being in a position to substantiate what he says Marigold project has cost overruns, I am challenging him on that. I want to ask him to furnish this house with the information and give us the source of the information. Because I am quite sure that there has been not one penny in cost overrun in Marigold. You know, and it is so sad. It is so sad, Mr. Speaker, that honorable members of this house take the roller on the outside and bring it here as facts. Give me the PowerPoint on it and assert what you say. Substantiate it. It just says that all what you've been saying there seems to go down the same alley of pas obligé voué.
Madam Speaker, the member for Castries East, can you substantiate the with facts and figures which you can make provision available to members of the House?
Mr. Speaker, last year we were promised houses in Marigold. We were told that when we come this year, there'll be houses in Marigold. I am saying to you that as we speak now, there's not one house in Marigold. So I am saying, I knew.
Member for Castries East, I think the member for Castries Central made a point and an objection to the fact that you said that there were cost overruns on the housing project at Marigold. I would like you to furnish the House with the evidence or withdraw the statement.
From cost overruns to time overruns.
So you are withdrawing the statement?
I'm saying that there are time overruns in Marigold. Time overruns.
You alluded to cost overruns.
Okay.
Are you withdrawing the fact that you said that there were cost overruns on the Marigold project?
Mr. Speaker, the Minister has not furnished me, like the road, about the cost of the Marigold project.
Member for Castries East, I would like you to withdraw the statement, please.
I withdraw the statement, Mr. Speaker, but there are time overruns on the Marigold project. Time overruns. And time is money. Madam Speaker, Madam Speaker, the member said Castries, he gets very annoyed at these things. He likes to attack, but anytime he comes back, he gets annoyed. Anyhow, Madam Speaker, there are time overruns in the Marigold project. Not one house yet. Madam Speaker, but we refuse to say how much these roads will cost. We refuse to say how much these roads will cost. We refuse to say. But so that the people of St. Lucia cannot compare actual costs to projected costs. But Madam Speaker, the majority of roads in the island are in disrepair. The majority of roads in the island. I see some effort is being made, but Madam Speaker, but I hope that the Minister of Communication and Works can deal equitable, can have an equitable distribution of road repairs and infrastructure works in the country. Madam Speaker, I now turn to the constituency of Castries East, a constituency that I've had the honor to represent for the last 10 years, a constituency that seems to be the craving for some people. A constituency, Madam Speaker, that everybody seems to want. Madam Speaker, during one of my discussions, and I hope the minister from Babano doesn't get punished for that, because you know the way you all do it in your party. The member for Babano told me that I seem to be afraid. I'm scared. I'm a cry baby. I confess, Mr. Speaker, I am afraid. I'm afraid. You know why I'm afraid? When I see people who have no history in the protection of poor people, people who have lived their adult life in seclusion in the better parts of the country, people who only knew Castries East for political purposes, people who before thought Marshall was forbidden territory, people who say that Marshall is not safe to put computers because they might steal them, people who say that people who believe that Castries East is a place where they must have demonstrations only, people who are involved in removing jazz from Castries East because they say that Castries East is not safe. When I see these people come and want to represent people in Castries East, and because they have the facility of government support, I am afraid. I am really afraid. So I confess that I am afraid. I am afraid because I want to continue helping the people of that constituency. I don't want to put them in the hands of people who will just use them and disappear. Madam Speaker, so I am afraid. So, member for Barbados, I am afraid. And Madam Speaker, once I see people interfering in my constituency, especially when they have been rejected, I will talk, I will speak, I will cry, because it's my duty. It's my duty to help these people. So I confess, I'm afraid. Madam Speaker, we started work in Bagatelle, Tourouge, and certain areas. That work has stopped. It stopped. The only reason why it has stopped, because other people can give contracts to people to do work. I am supposed to be the parliamentary representative for Cash Disease. I see work happening in the constituency, and this, I am elected 3 times. I see work being done in the constituency, and I am told that that work is being done with the tactical support of the government agencies. I want to tell you, Mr. Minister, to stop it. I'm speaking to you, Mr. Minister Committee. Stop it. Because you see, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, Mr. Speaker. Everything that happens, I know in my constituency. There are no secrets. Because you see, I have a relationship with these people. They understand that I'm not in power. They understand it. They understand that my constituency is being neglected. They understand that I am made to suffer, that they are made to suffer because they voted for me. They understand that I can't give them free food on Sundays. They understand that. They understand I can't do it. They know that. No, I can't. When I was in government, I gave them work. So I gave them free food. I didn't give them free food. I used to give them work. That's the difference. So, Madam Speaker, they understand that. So they understand that these things, they understand that, Madam Speaker. So what I'm saying to you, Madam Speaker, is the Entrepo River Wall is in a state of collapse. The Human Resource Development Center is moving, Mr. Minister. And it's not because it's a project that was built under my time, Mr. Head collapse. Please, I am crying for you. I am crying. That's your habit, you're back in the past. But the fact is, it's there already. So don't let it collapse. It's there already, it's there already. And I'm crying. I'm a cry baby for it. Fix the wall by the Human Resource Development Center. Fix it. Because it's a social asset. It's a state asset. It's not my asset. It's a state asset. I want you to fix it. Mr. Speaker, I was only consulted twice when it comes to work in my constituency. Twice. Directly consulted. $60,000 one way, and they had 2 lists. They gave me 1 list, and they gave somebody else another list. $60,000 one way, and another $60,000 another way. That's the only consultation I've had in my constituency. Mr. Speaker, the point I am making to you is that we, the people of Cash East, they have an elected representative. And I am putting it to you that this constituency is being neglected. There are issues of youth unemployment. There are serious issues, Madam Speaker. There are serious issues of the development of small business. When we started a project where we developed a set of people who dealt in the massage industry. We gave them chairs. We trained them so that they could employ themselves. We have these ideas. Nothing has been done. All because the people of Cash East did not vote for the United Workers Party. Madam Speaker, I'm saying to you, Mr. Speaker, I expect the support of government agencies and consultation for my constituency. And I hope that in this coming fiscal year, Cash East is not made to suffer because it voted Labour. There are many issues in Cash East to deal with. There are many infrastructural issues, Madam Speaker. And to use the old excuse that peer not asking for nothing. So people don't believe that. People know it's not true because my connection to the people of Kashishis have shown them that I have been a champion for the cause. Madam Speaker, this budget will not help to solve the critical problems of this country. It will not help to solve the unemployment situation. It will not help to solve the crime problem. It will not help to solve the problems that the people of St. Lucia are feeling. This budget will not help it. It's an attempt, Mr. Speaker, to mask the real issues facing the country with blame and deceit. Carefully chosen words that bear no relationship to the state of the nation. It does not speak to a St. Lucia where hundreds of St. Lucians are losing their jobs, where crime is on the increase, where businesses are reporting poor sales, where there is no confidence in the capacity and the capability of the government to handle the problems of the country. It is a budget prepared in seclusion. It's like a doctor who is prescribing medicine without seeing the patient. That's what this budget is all about. It is not based in reality. It's not based in what is happening in the country. It's not, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Mr. Speaker, we are living in trying times. The Prime Minister says we are living in a crisis. Crisis situations are not new. We have dealt with crises before. What makes a people strong is the way they can deal with the crises that approach them. The way they deal with it, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the late Winston Churchill said, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on. A lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on. A lie. And that is the philosophy, Madam Speaker. That's the philosophy that this government attempts. A lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can put its pants on. So all you do is you blame the government. All you do is you blame Kerry Anthony. All you do, you say, you did it too, and the problems of the country continue to manifest itself. Madam Speaker, can we trust the contents of the budget? Are the goals in the budget real, based on the fact that the seven projects and the seven hotels never came, and the 7,000 jobs were never fulfilled? Can we trust what is in this budget? Madam Speaker, the government is obsessed with control. The government is so obsessed with control that they want to put public assistance in the hands of a cabinet. Budget. The government, Madam Speaker, they want page 32 of the budget. Cabinet has appointed a committee specifically to review the public assistance list. What's wrong with that? Is that you want to bring public assistance under the control of the cabinet. Because your intention is to review the list. Now, why do you want to review the list if your people on the list are indigent and poor? So what you are saying, it is left based on your history, based on the way unelected people can give piece of paper to ministries. What you want to say is that you want to bring public assistance to review the public assistance list. And I'm saying to you, that should be a function of the technocrats, not the cabinet. That's what I'm saying to you. Cabinet is not supposed to be involved in public assistance. You're supposed to set up a criteria for public assistance.
Madam Speaker, on a point of clarification, I think I should clarify this matter. The statement that is made in the budget, Madam Speaker, is one which gives an indication of certain measures that the cabinet has undertaken. The cabinet has requested the relevant ministry through the appointment of a committee which comprises church leaders, community organizations to review the overall list and to make recommendations for future enhancements of the program. That's all.
Madam Speaker, that is in the Prime Minister's mind. There is nothing in this document that says anything about church leaders. There is nothing on page 42 of this document that says anything about church leaders. What it reads to is that Cabinet has appointed a committee specifically to review the public assistance list. That's what it says. So you see, that's what it says, Madam Speaker. So if it is church leaders, etc. But Madam Speaker, the history, the government has a history in its short 2 years. It has a history. We came in this Honorable House, and I was there, and I applauded the Minister for Social Transformation for the intermingling of basic needs trust and power reduction fund. I was there. You were there too, Mr. Prime Minister. Because I love St. Lucia too, you know. We love St. Lucia too. You're not the only one who loves St. Lucia. We love St. Lucia. So when we were there, and we praise you. We praise your minister for merging Bell Fund with Poverty Reduction Fund and Basic Needs Fund. But we told you to go an extra way, an extra step, and involve the opposition directly. You said no, because you were talking about agencies. We didn't agree with you, but we thought that the concept was good, so we supported you. So do not play as if we're just saying things for saying sake. What I'm saying to you is that page says nothing about church leaders. It says about reviewing the public assistance list. So if you have church leaders in your mind, say it or put it down. Don't try this flashing mirrors. Madam Speaker, the government is obsessed with control. It's obsessed with control. It speaks about the public service. The government says that they are going to cap the civil service. But on page 56, hear what the government says about the same civil service. It says the number of established workers in the public service and the associated costs will be capped at the current level. Now, cap means cap, eh? But listen to the next sentence. Any request for new positions will first have to be approved by the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Public Service following a review of the entire public service. The scope of the review will be both interministerial, intra-ministerial, and interministerial. But, Madam Speaker, if you are capping the civil service, why do you need extra posts? But you said you're capping it. You know why? It is an obsession with the need to control. The need to put their hands in every pie because of the fear that Kenny will put his boys in the public service. That's the fear. There's an obsession with Kenny Anthony, an obsession with the Labour Party. The government cannot breathe if they don't attack the opposition. Cannot breathe. Every minister on this side, with the exception of probably one and half of one, will attack every one of them, with the exception. I don't want to create more disharmony in the camps, I won't say who. With the exception of probably one, half of one, and three quarters of another. will blatantly attack everybody else. Every one of them. Because you see, there's an obsession. The government doesn't understand that they have a country to run. Kenny. So you hear them. You hear all of them. Attack. Refusing. One minister won't do it. Half of one will not. And three quarters of another. No. I say what I say. So, Madam Speaker, the government is not gracious. The government refuses.
Members, order, and there shall be no names mentioned in the House, please.
I did not notice.
Members, thank you.
Madam Speaker, let me just apologize. I was the one who called Harold out. So I know in the social circles he's normally referred to as half a man, so I thought that was what he was referring to.
Please, members, this does not have to go down this way. Please stick to the relevant issues at this time.
Madam Speaker, I take serious objection to the statement, to the extent I want the minister to withdraw it in the same manner that the deputy speaker asked the minister to withdraw a statement a while ago.
I withdraw the statement, Madam Speaker.
Shall we continue? You have 20 minutes left. You end at 12:15.
But, Madam Speaker, the government is not gracious. The government is not gracious to accept the things that they cannot change in terms of the legacy of the Social Labour Party. The Prime Minister boasts about a new hospital. He boasts in 33 months the British country have a new hospital. Madam Speaker, not for one instant, not for one fleeting moment did the Prime Minister recognize the work of the former Prime Minister and the former Minister of Health in the process that got us to the new hospital. Not for one moment. Madam Speaker, this is really, how can we set an example to our children? When something that blatant, we cannot spare one moment and say that the new hospital is a great idea, but that work started in a few years ago. But I heard the Prime Minister pay homage to the late Romanus Dantico for his work in the hospital. And I agreed, because Romanus always had that vision of a new hospital. Although he didn't get the support, but he had that vision of a new hospital. And we applauded him for that. But after Romanus, there were stages after Romanus. Say them too. So do not try to appear. Don't try to give the people the impression that the Labour Party did nothing good. And all of you left is death. Stop it. Because what I've told the members of this government, politics is temporary. Every one of us in this house, elected and unelected, will be out of politics someday. And what the way you treat people when you're in power is the same thing that will haunt you when you're out of power. So never behave as if you'll be in power forever. Always remember that you're going to be out of power in some day. And there ought to be a code of ethics among politicians. There ought to be a code of ethics. There ought to be certain areas where politicians do not cross. I've maintained that point, Madam Speaker. But there needs to be ethics. So these situations, Madam Speaker, where the government believes that it can vilify its opponents with propaganda, with lies, both in English and patois, creating a smoke screen on the real situation in the country. The government doesn't trust the people to tell people the exact circumstances in the country. But they believe by attacking the opposition, by using emotive terms like death, that will create a smoke screen for the people of St. Lucia, Madam Speaker. The government continues to valuable commentary on topical issues is dismissed with scorn, is dismissed with derision, is dismissed. When members of the opposition make valuable contributions on issues that affect the country, we are dismissed, you understand? Because they hope that can hurt us, that can break our spirit, Madam Speaker. It will not break the spirit of the members of this House. It will not break our spirit because we love St. Lucia too. St. Lucia doesn't belong only to the government, Madam Speaker. The government must stop this blame game. The government must stop this idea that they believe once you can attack the opposition, once you can continue to attack Kenny, once you can continue to lie, I'm going to be talking about lies. I want to tell members of this Honorable House, true, that my sister is alive. She's not dead. Please, don't kill her. I just want to make that point. Madam Speaker, these are the lies that the government continues to directly or indirectly cause people to believe in this country. They must stop it, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, can we trust a government that fails to keep its promises? Can we trust a government that says that they've signed agreements, not only public service agreements, agreements for refineries, and suddenly you say you cannot pay again? Suddenly, or you say there is no refinery again. Can we trust a government like that? The government knew fully well when they were talking about the oil refinery, when people were boasting that they would have jobs in the oil refinery. The government knew fully well, and we said so. But again, they dismissed us. They attacked us. Up to now, there is no oil refinery. The Prime Minister told us that the land had already been purchased for the oil refinery, and it would be a $7 billion investment up to now. That is what the government must stop doing. The government must stop saying these things, Mr. Speaker. The government must stop saying things that they know will only give them political points. Because you have a country to run. It's not a constituency, it's a country. And time is of the essence. Time. You already have spent 2.5 years. Time. Madam Speaker, the government must set the example. The government cannot tell people to make sacrifices when the government is not setting the example by making sacrifices itself. And Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister is talking about a 10% salary cut in the budget. Madam Speaker, salary deductions and salary cuts, these things are not new to us. The bell fashions that they speak about, when we were in government, we gave the bell fashion workers all our back pay. So that is not new. We have a history that, so that is not any big, and that's not any big or new or anything new. We gave them our entire back pay. Our entire back pay. Our entire back pay was given today. In terms of your cut, your 10% salary cut, that is an arrangement that you spoke to on your own. You never consulted the opposition. If you were serious, if that wasn't a political gimmick, what the government should have done, the government should have called the members of parliament and say, members of parliament, we want to target 10% of our salary. If your salaries, I hope, haven't changed. 10% your direct salaries. 10%, I don't know whether the 10% is the salary on, is a payment on your, I don't know if the 10% is based on your basic salary, which is $7,000, or on your salary for allowances, which is $10,270. That ought to be your salary. That's your salary, yes, before tax. Yes, that. You see, you don't know your salary? 10%, whether it's 10% on the basic salary or 10% on the total salary, it makes a big difference. 10% of 7,000 is 700, 10% of 10,000 is 1,000, whichever, not just the 10%. But if the intention was not a political situation, you would have sat down and spoken to all the members of parliament and said to them, gentlemen, let us set the example. Let us decide how much, if there is a need for a salary cut, what the salary cut will save, what benefits it will accrue, and where else we are making these changes? Where else? Then we would have said, let us, all of us, decide on a salary cut. But you don't unilaterally announce a salary cut in public to sound good politically. That is not good enough. I'll tell you where you can cut salaries. You can cut expenses. You can cut expenses in the use of SLG vehicles. You can cut it there. Because when we were in government, we only used SLG vehicles except the Prime Minister. And you have a right to do it because you're the Prime Minister. So don't try it. I'm not talking about you. We only used SLG vehicles for official purposes with drivers. So when I came to work, I packed my vehicle, and then the driver took me to official circumstances. Right now, SLG vehicles in politics. Yes, there are SLG vehicles being used, being packed by constituency offices with drivers after 4:30 for political purposes. That's a fact. with drivers. SLG vehicles are being parked next to political offices with drivers after 4:40. It's up to you to find out. I didn't say so. You said it. You understand? That is where you have to begin to cut. You have to begin to cut the use of your vehicles, because there are vehicles, SLG vehicles, that are parked by people's homes for the entire evening. That's the private transportation for some ministers, not all, some of them. Some others, like the Minister of Central Castries, only uses his for official purposes. And the member for Babano. You understand? And I think the member for Gozili. But there are other members who use their SLG vehicles for personal reasons. And I'm putting it to you, Mr. Prime Minister, to start by stopping that. Start by stopping it. You understand? Stop the use of the vehicles by the government. But the same time that the government is talking about SLG vehicles, they are saying that they realize a cut of 20% in the number of government vehicles during the financial year. Steps will be initiated immediately to realize, a cut of 20% in the number of government vehicles during the financial year. What does that mean? You're going to sell it? So you're going to sell what you have? That's what you're going to do. So you're not going to have any vehicles again. 20% less. You're going to have 20% less. But why is he saying that? You want to put your civil servants on scooters? Select. You. if that wasn't so serious, that really is a comedy. But it's a government you're running. It's a government. But the Prime Minister wants to put his drivers on scooters, so they bring back scooters. Madam Speaker, this is a serious issue. This is serious. It's not a laughing matter. But these are the things that we're talking about, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister should have known that the days of letter deliveries are passé. There is something called the internet and emails. You understand? So what you must do is you must restructure the way information is distributed or is through the civil service by using the technology available. That is where you must spend the money. In these kind of things, that's just advice. I mean, the scooter was a joke. That's just advice. You must use the technology. You must use it. There is technology available to deal with these issues. So, Madam Speaker, the government must be serious about wastage and don't deal with these token things. I'm putting it to the Prime Minister that he must look and be able to control the traveling of his ministers. Because I know that the government has already exceeded its travel budget for last year. And this year, I think they may be very close. The Prime Minister, well, for last year, they exceeded the Prime Minister. You have to supplement the travel budget. I'm putting it to you that you must set the example. Ensure that your ministers only travel when they need to travel. You understand? That's how you set examples, Madam Speaker.
Madam Speaker, on a point of clarification, I really hate doing this, but over time it can get lost. Ministers of government, when they travel, all ministers travel economy class. Okay? Their ministers, by virtue of their membership to certain airline programs, are upgraded when they travel with absolutely no cost to government. Last year, government was forced to supplement the travel budget, and there was only one reason for this, and that is because of the spiraling increase in air tickets. Okay, that was the main reason. Okay, the travel cost has increased.
Madam Speaker, I do not want, the Prime Minister may not know, because there are certain things that he doesn't know. Understand? I know for a fact that there's at least one minister of travel's business class, and you pay for it. One, Minister. But let's move on. At least one. Because, Madam Speaker, I will never come. You see, what the Prime Minister doesn't understand is when I talk about traveling, I'm not speaking about it for political gain. I'm speaking about it to deal with the waste that you're speaking about in the country. And I'm saying to you, you mustn't impute improper motives in everything we say on this side. What we are saying to you is try to rationalize it. That's all we're saying to you. We're saying to you try and rationalize the travel so that there can be less wastage as far as government travel is concerned. So, Madam Speaker, where do we go from there? By the Prime Minister's own admittance, he admits himself, his admission, the country is in chaos. He says the world economy is in crisis. That's what he says. He says there's crisis in the world economy. He says that St. Lucia will have a 0.7% economic growth in 2007. And by if Royal Caribbean improve the Castries business center, and if he spends $55 million revival of Port Castries, $60 million Huanoro Airport extension, $42.5 million Baton Rouge Hypermart, $45 million fire station, $41 million housing projects. If that happens, St. Lucia will have a 1% economic growth. So that means the Prime Minister, by his own, he's admitting that the country is in economic crisis. Based on what happened last year, where the government defaulted in its capital accounts, where the government had to use reserves from the central bank to deal with its current expenses. $29.5 million, 1.1% of the GDP. Based on that, Madam Speaker, I am saying to the Prime Minister that budget is unrealistic. That budget cannot solve the pressing problems of the country. That budget and the government policy is still too party focused. There is too much blame going around in this country. The government is...
Honourable Member, you just have about 4 minutes to wrap up your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I will need no exercise. Thank you very much. Madam Speaker, the government must understand that it was elected to govern. The government must stop policy decisions that will make, or they believe will make, the opposition feel bad. The government must stop misforming people on the debt situation. If the government speaks about the debt situation, the government must speak about it in comparative terms. The government must say to people that the economies of the world that they're speaking of, the great economy of the United States that we can't compare ourselves with, that economy has had to borrow trillions of dollars for stimulus plans. That economy has had to do it. So the idea of borrowing for government expenditure is nothing new. And this government will have to borrow if it wants its capital budget, if it wants its capital expenditure to proceed. It must borrow. Because you have issues that you have to do for capital expenditure. So, Madam Speaker, finally, I know the Prime Minister would like to hear that. President Obama, he said, to those who cling to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history. Madam Speaker, the government of St. Lucia must take note. I thank you.